Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin and how did they end? Let's find out on today's special episode of Fan of History.
That, my friends, was the great Ryan Stitt of the History of Ancient Greece podcast. This is the second episode with Bernie talking to Ryan about ancient Greece. So if you haven't listened to part one, you should do that. I want to give a personal shout out to Ryan for coming on, and I'm sorry that I couldn't join the podcast. But I think Bernie did a great job, and without further ado, here is Ryan Stitt and Bernie.
I'm pretty cool. I go like right into the... I get ahead a little, but I pretty much, I kind of have tunnel vision when I do it. I try to just get into that decade, and I try to find little weird stories too. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, why do you think there were so many Greeks or mercenaries for so long? And not just after they had the phalanx before. You think they were like great fighters or just so many of them, the killers? What do you think?
They had superior weapons technology with the hoplites. They were good fighters. Everybody wanted to hire, the Egyptians wanted to hire them. They had some in the Libyans, when the Libyans tried to overtake the Egyptians, you know, the Near East, most of the Near Eastern army, like Lydians, wanted Spartan mercenaries, or not mercenaries, Spartan soldiers. They wanted the Greeks to fight for them because they knew how disciplined they were. Mercenaries really, I mean, it wasn't really that big of a thing until later. Obviously the mercenaries from the Greek mercenaries, I mean, big of a thing in terms of like, it wasn't as popular until say like the later Peloponnesian War into the 4th century. And everyone remembers Xenophon's famous, the 10,000 mercenaries that go off to fight for Cyrus II, trying to overthrow his brother, not Cyrus the Great, but another Cyrus, a later one. But early on, like you would get, you know, some people would go off to be mercenaries for various reasons. Adventure, maybe they were poor or they were really rich, but they weren't part of the ruling class. And this is the same reason kind of why you get people colonizing too. Like, okay, maybe there's famine, maybe something. Or maybe they were Eastern Greeks who, you know, just kind of wanted an adventure or something. You never really know. You're just conjecturing why people, you know, hire themselves out now of swords, sell swords.
Because they had free, they could, they were, you know, they weren't ruled by a single ruler. Like, you know, I couldn't imagine Ashurbanipal letting a bunch of his citizens like be in the employ of someone else's army.
Yeah. They were quote unquote free in the sense that they had their city state, and this Greece wasn't.
Right.
Greece. Like, it's not what you think of like modern Greece. It was individual. It was more of like each city state was more of the way a good analogy, but it's not roughly equivalent, but a good analogy would kind of be like the U.S. like 13 colonies. Like mm-hmm. each city state was kind of like its own colony in a sense, in the pre-revolution days, where like they mm-hmm. had autonomy, but they were kind of, they knew they all kind of came from the same
right. Or maybe like Christian yeah. Europe, like when they would do it, the Crusades, maybe, you know, they fight each other all the time, but then they band together to fight the against his Muslims.
Well, not really, in the sense that like even when they fought the Persians, they didn't all band together. They were
right.
It was only about, I think, 30% of the Greeks actually fought in the Persian War for the Greeks. And some of them were neutral. Some of them actually fought on the Persian side. It was very much a civil war as opposed mm-hmm. to an external war, too.
It's amazing that they beat them. I mean, it just, you know, it always is. It's one of those amazing things in history, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. And also, I mean, like looking back on it, too, it's like, okay, they beat them and they pushed them out. But if the Persians really wanted to defeat them.
Yeah.
Like if they wanted to throw every single resource they had at it to do it, they could have done yeah. that. yeah. Like, yeah, like they could have
worked it. It's so far away. Right.
Yeah. But they were just, you know, they just like these, they were these kind of, yeah, nobodies, quote unquote, nobodies on their periphery. Like they were like, okay, well, whatever. We'll just, you know, go back to where we were going and going back to making money and deal with people in the East.
Yeah.
Which we don't get a whole lot of record of what they're doing in the East, because they tended to be, I don't want to say illiterate, because they weren't illiterate, but they didn't write or leave records quite like we get when we get with like the Hebrews and the Greeks and the Egyptians.
Yeah, the Babylonians people. Kept a lot of records too.
Yeah. So we don't have like a lot of records from the people the Persians fought in the East, the North, the Northeast. So you can yeah. get a lot, you can only get a lot of conjectures, or Herodotus mentions a few battles with the Massagetae and the Scythians, but like it's just a lot of it was like you can just assume that there was constant battles on their borders in the East, that the armies were every year or every few years had to go out and, you know, keep, but we don't really get that. So like right. when the Persian record is silent, it's kind of, you know, you just quote unquote insert, okay, they're consolidating their government, consolidating power, probably dealing with people in the East.
Yeah. It's like the Assyrians were always dealing with somebody in the East, but it was the people who were the Persians end up being the Persians, right? And they're always fighting in Elam or in Babylonia or in those places.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's still funny how like they, even the Greeks get them wrong. They call Ashurbanipal Sardanapalus, I think it is, right?
And they, I don't know that. Great,
yeah. They have this story. They, let me see. They call him Sardanapalus, and they basically get him mixed up with his brother. There's a play, and he's called Sardanapalus. Hang on a second.
Well, I mean, the Greeks changed a lot of names to sound better for the Greek tongue. So a lot of like names, a lot of Greek names end in O-S or I-O-N, and you'll mm-hmm. see Cyrus, Xerxes, Darius, like that's not their actual Persian name. So, I mean, and we do the same with English. Like we anglicize everything.
Yeah.
Like the Greek words we've turned into, and the Romans did it too. They took the Greek words and turned them into Latin, better for their language. So it's just, you know, that's what they do. That's, and we know these people by the Greek names in the Greek sources, which goes, you know, because the Greek sources are what we have, and they're predominantly, we don't have like a Persian chronicle of their own history. We have Greeks talking about Persian history, so we know them by the Greek names, just like a lot of the Egyptian rulers, pharaohs, we know by Greek names or by the names that they were called, and not right. by their own names that they
thankfully,
were.
Thankfully, because yeah. the Egyptian names are really hard to pronounce compared to Greek names.
Sometimes people know by their Egyptian names now, like Greek Cheops instead of mm-hmm. Khufu, but people call Khufu now. Like sometimes, like, you know, it changes, but like, yeah, they changed their names. Basically, and that's not like a nationalistic kind of, we don't like your name. It's just like everybody does that.
Right.
I'm not
course.
Saying it's right, but it's just what it is. Like,
right. We call Los Angeles, not Los Angeles, you know, yeah. that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but they really had it mixed up, because there was they described Ashurbanipal, they call him Sardanapalus, and they described him as a rich and effeminate king of Nineveh. And then in the end, he set himself on fire with all his treasure and concubine when faced with a rebellion by a Mede general. So that's obviously all mixed up. I think they probably just took a story, you know, the story of the Shamashuma Ukin. That was Ashurbanipal's brother in the rebellion. And then just sort of, you know, made a story out of it. Either that or they just didn't have it, you know, they didn't know. So we'll never know. We'll never know what they knew, I guess, but for sure. I mean, we know that all these places are connected and everything, but they're still, they're still far away from each other. You know, 600 BC, when you don't have a car or a plane to get there and a phone to call, even though they're connected. But if you lose a little, I think if you lose a little bit, you know, if just the people that are connected lose the memory or the connections that they had and the knowledge of these other civilizations, then I don't know. I guess you just sort of, you just lose it. You know, you don't really understand everything about them as much as like the Persians and the Greeks that obviously knew a lot more about each other once they've been in contact for so long.
I don't know if it's necessarily that they lost knowledge or they don't had knowledge of each other. It's just, I mean, the people who would come into contact with the other civilizations obviously knew the other people. But are we talking like the everyday farmer who is living on their farm?
Right, of course.
Are they going to really know about all the different people in the world other than, you know, maybe what they heard when they went to the local agora and like gossip or, these are, and then, you know, like the upper elite classes are getting like these rich Phoenician and Egyptian like jewelry and things like, okay, like most of their contact would have been through like goods, I would imagine.
Or
the people who were, say, Egyptian traders, maybe at the Greek ports, might have been an Egyptian ship pulling in or something, or a Phoenician ship pulling in. Your knowledge of a said type of people comes from a certain other class of people.
Yeah, it comes through filter. Sort of like the Romans and the Chinese, though, you know, like they knew that there was this place, but when they really didn't understand what was each were like, they did have some, you know, they got close, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, they generally knew where the people were. I mean, in the 6th century is when you start getting a lot of our earliest evidence for maps, cartography. And I'm sure people knew it beforehand because they would have to sail. They used stars to figure out how to get different places, and different seasons were better for sailing. But you start seeing like our earliest evidence for cartography. And for the most part, I mean, it's relatively accurate in the sense of like the Mediterranean. Obviously, everywhere outside of that is like they didn't have.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The exact boundaries correct,
right?
But like they kind of knew where the different peoples were in the Mediterranean. Like, okay, the Lydians were to the east, Phoenicians were to the southeast, Egypt was to the further, was a little bit more south as opposed to southeast. Well, it was southeast, but not quite as southeast at like, you know, more 5 o'clock, less 4 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, like it relatively where the people were, they knew that. And again, people who would be making these cartography maps were richer people who had the luxury of traveling as well.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been like the everyday person who lived on their farm and basically was just trying to survive.
Right. So, he doesn't even know who's in charge or what, probably. Yeah. Most of them, you know.
Yeah,
but it's still interesting like that they got the Assyrians so wrong later, you know, that they they knew that there was something in Nineveh, but they didn't, such a big empire that they just, I don't know, like it doesn't seem like either really understood what was going on over there.
What do you mean they got them wrong?
They called Ashurbanipal this funny name. They really don't know the story. They call him the king of Nineveh. Like, it doesn't seem like they really had, from what I've looked, that there was only a small amounts of Assyria ever mentioned by the Greeks later, and then came through Egypt.
But I mean, it's very dangerous to talk like that. That like that's what they knew, because First off, the sources, it could just be that that's what that particular source knew, and we also don't have. As we have like 1% of the ancient literature that survived.
Well, true. Yeah, maybe then they, you know, everybody didn't know what was going on over there. As far as Assyria.
I would imagine that political rulers in the Eastern Greeks among Ionia and like the ruling classes probably were very familiar with the vicissitudes of a lot of the Eastern kingdoms.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And the traders probably were very familiar with what was going on in their kingdoms. They probably heard things that were taking place as they pulled up to the docks, you know, gossip hour. They probably knew at least snippets of what was going on. They weren't ignorant.
Right. As they said, there was rebellions too. The Greeks were involved in, you know,
and the mercenaries they were fighting. They would have known at least somewhat what was going on. They weren't going to be completely ignorant of what they were fighting or where they were fighting or who they were fighting.
Yeah. And they say Almena was destroyed around 700, probably by Sennacherib.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they rebuilt it, but they must have known that it was some badass came in there and, you know, did some business. I mean, that was the Phoenicians by then were vassals of Assyria. So, So, you know, that's the thing. I guess, they, you know, the Greeks and the Eastern and Easterners did, they knew about each other. Before, you know, like I said, as we were told in grade school and high school, that they were like, who are these Greeks? But they must have all known each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, known each other in the sense that they knew they existed.
Right.
I agree with
each other. And of course, that's why the Greeks went west. They couldn't colonize the east because they knew there were civilizations that were already there.
Mm-hmm. And they went northeast and west.
Right.
Northeast and west. There was some colonies south and east, but very little. Like you said, Almena, it wasn't a colony, but it was more of a trading post. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Egypt, Naucratis and Thonis. They were trading posts. There was Cyrene. That was a colony, a Greek colony. So near Carthage or near North African coastline. But most of it was Italy, southern Italy, Sicily. France, southern France, eastern Spain, and the Black Sea and the northern Aegean coastline.
They mean they really were the most different. I mean, you know, I just don't, you don't see the other, the Near Eastern civilizations, I guess, you know, spreading out the way the Greeks did. Just so much energy, I guess. I mean, the Near Eastern was just conquered everybody, or these guys were doing all kind of things all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I guess that kind of wraps it up, right?
Wraps what up?
What we're talking about.
for the Assyrians?
Just in general, I mean, I don't know if there's any, you know, but eventually we come up to the 500 BC when the Persians and the Greeks do throw down. So obviously by that point, everybody knows about each other for 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they were, again, Black Sea trading, Eastern Mediterranean trading, the Greeks were fighting as mercenaries in Neo-Babylonian Egyptian armies, Lydian armies. They were on diplomatic missions. There was pottery sent back and forth, so trade. We have evidence of materials from all, even like Central Asian peoples in Greece, and Greek pottery as far as like Urartu and all throughout the Black Sea. So we know like at least upper class people who had the ability to travel, supposedly people like Pythagoras went all the way to India and Egypt and Babylon to be like trained in mathematics and stuff. So like the people who were rich, who are the sources, kind of, you know, they could just leave and go travel and sightsee.
Right.
Solon did that in Athens. in the 6th century, early 6th century. He traveled around the Mediterranean and visited people. Herodotus, I mean, this is the reason he was able to write his stories is and able to travel and see the people is because, you know, he was wealthy. He came from a wealthy class in Halicarnassus, or a wealthy family in Halicarnassus. So, like, the wealthy people who had the ability to travel, especially later when the Persian Royal Road would be established, it made traveling throughout the empire, the interior, throughout, like, a lot easier. There was definitely interaction throughout the Iron Age. Most of it was trade and a lot of cultural interaction where you learn about things from traders who pulled up to the port, or, you know, some people would learn some things and they would adapt it to their own. There's a lot of religious connections with especially a lot of the early cults. I talk about that a lot, and I have a series of a dozen or so episodes on all the individual major gods plus some of the minor ones, and you talk about like the early history of their cults, and you see a lot of connections between Mesopotamian cultic and practices in their deities, Egyptian, Anatolian, local gods. There's none of these civilizations existed in a bubble, basically. Yeah,
that's correct. And then they, you know, right around that, I think right around the mid 600s is when Homer was writing, probably, right? We think, and a lot of that got
the 600s.
I mean,
I don't think Homer was actually
they were writing, you know, like even the Bible was kind of written there. It seems like these civilizations were writing their origin stories around that time.
Yeah, a lot of people have
each other.
Mm-hmm. I don't actually believe Homer ever existed as a person, but somewhere around 750 to 600, I guess. 750 to 700 or so is like the traditional date. Some people will place it much later. I mean, Homer, as we kind of see have it today, was fixed by Pisistratus in Athens in the late 600s at a festival, like, because there were so many different versions of this story, and they wrote them down as one. But, like, the story itself was date, you know, 8th century.
Sure, right. It's like the Bible. A lot of the Bible stuff was done right around then, too, and so it seems like these cultures were getting their... They're looking back to from the past all the way back there, and then, you know, creating their identity as Greeks, as Hebrews, as that kind of thing. But obviously, if they're mixing with each other, they're influencing each other.
I mean, every Mediterranean culture has a flood story. There's very similar stories in all the different ancient myths or all the different cultural myths. You see a lot of similarities in Greek myth and Mesopotamian myth and Egyptian myth, just different names. And some of the details may be the same, but, you know, that big picture theme, very similar.
Right. But you don't see similarities between Greeks and the Aztecs or anything like that. Cause they're obviously not near each other at all, not connected. So that's one of the reasons you could see that these people were connected.
No matter what people may say, the Greeks or the Romans never went to South America or North America. Yeah. No matter what you may see on the History Channel.
Right. And as I always say, the aliens did not build the pyramids either.
Nor did slaves.
No, probably. No.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think you would.
Or Hebrew slaves, I should say. Nor did Hebrew slaves.
What was that?
I said, nor did Hebrew slaves.
No.
That you would see in the Bible of the Exodus. They did not build the pyramids.
No. My theory has always been that they were people that they had too much, you know, too many people that had too much time on their hands, maybe, and they had them put rocks on top of other rocks to keep them out of getting in trouble and give them beer and food. It's like a working theory I have. You know, once the farms became like productive, and then people didn't need to like work all day long, and now you have these people, and you don't want people idle, so put rocks on top of rocks. I'm sure that wasn't the main plan, but it kind of worked out that way. But anyway, I digress. So yeah, I think we summed it all up. You think?
Yeah.
Well, I think that we pretty much covered pretty thoroughly, don't you think, Ryan?
Yeah. I had fun. This was fun. I like your guys' podcast. So I'm very honored that you asked me to come on. Tell Dan that I'm disappointed that he couldn't come to this as well. No, I'm just messing.
Yeah, it's hard to get all the times together, but maybe you and Dan will do one sometime.
Yeah, he's Sweden, right?
Yeah, he's in Sweden. I'm trying to talk him into going to the I heard you on the podcaster. I know the name. I can't remember the name of the event. It's in New York, but you guys did it virtually this year. What's the name of that event?
Oh, Intelligent Speech. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to because I'm only a couple hours from New York, so I'm trying to talk Dan into coming to New York for that next year if they have it, or maybe the year after.
Yeah, I think we'll see. We'll see how the world is next summer. If they still have a vaccine or whatnot, but we'll see how that goes. But it was a lot of fun.
Ryan. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say it was a lot of fun last year in New York City, and I was really bummed that I couldn't go back this year.
Yeah,
because every time I go to New York City, I spend hours in the Met. It's become I try to go to New York City at least once a year and go see the Met and the Natural History Museum and the Planetarium, and I didn't get to see the Met this year.
Well, if it goes next year or the year after, we'll have to keep in touch, and maybe we could meet up out there, because even my daughter lives in Brooklyn, so I got friends in New York too and stuff. So yeah, so thank you very much, Ryan. And his podcast is The History of Ancient Greece, right? And we'll put the links to that in our show notes.
Mm-hmm.
For Ryan's fans, ours is Fan of History.
You can follow me on Twitter at Greek History Pod or Instagram at Greece History Pod. Apparently, I couldn't get Greek History Pod. Someone already made it, I guess. But I couldn't find it. So I think somebody made it and then deleted it. But yeah,
they're not an overachiever like you. You've been doing all these episodes. I mean, I know you put a lot of work in your episodes. So I could tell you guys that.
Thank you.
You could, you know, and then, I mean, it's easier for me because I talk with you or I talk with Dan. You're doing them standalone by yourself and just, they're great. I mean, I'm sure I use them as references for our podcast. I bet people use it for school and everything like that. So they're definitely very informative. I highly recommend them.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yep, you're welcome. Well, thank you very much, and maybe we'll do it again soon. We'll come up with a topic. Yeah, and Fan of History is on all the social media, and they're Fan of History. So, and my name is Bernie Mayopolsky, if you need to find me.
All right.
All right, thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.